It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics, and I am your host, John Clark. Steven's out today, and we'll get to why in a minute, but David Redfield's here.
I'm here. I'm taking over for Steve, so I'm going to do a little quick Steven. Avengers are awesome. I work at Chimera Comics, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. What else does he say? I don't watch Firefly or anything.
You're also sitting in his chair.
I'm harnessing the Steven Brown right now.
You're the first person to sit in that chair.
Yeah, I'm
the same. In 40 podcasts besides Steven.
Is it still warm?
No, it's not. Steven's a small man. He doesn't keep things warm that often.
No. Well, we do use it during the week. My family does sit in that chair as well. We don't put tape across it. But Dave has brought Neil Fisher with him.
Yes, my co-writer, Neil Fisher.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And the reason Steven's not here, and the reason that Dave and Neil are here is because right after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we did last week, was the final episode of Breaking Bad. And Steven hasn't started Breaking Bad yet, so we figured he didn't want to be anywhere in this room.
I don't think Steven's going to start Breaking Bad for like another, 3 years or something like
Maybe.
That?
Maybe. Well, he can't watch it in the store.
Which is a poor excuse.
Right. Well,
those children need to learn the world of meth.
You need to know how to strangle a guy with a bike lock.
Yep. Right. Especially those bullies.
It's a valuable skill.
I think it is.
You need to know how to poison a boy with an ordinary flower.
Well, we've learned that what happens to kids who don't wear helmets when they ride their bike.
Yeah.
So,
that's true. Todd shoots you. Yeah, Todd shoots you.
It's a good learning lesson for them in the store.
So if you haven't guessed already, this one is going to be incredibly spoiler-filled. We save it until after the final one. And my thought about it, I am fairly convinced that this is the best series I have ever seen. And the reason behind that was I think of the last four or five shows where the ending meant so much, where you were going somewhere, where it wasn't like a 30 Rock, where it was just like, oh, most of the episodes were great, so it's great. Where you were constantly on a path to a goal. I feel like Lost got really wobbly. Battlestar Galactica dropped the ball, then picked it up, then fumbled it, but got there. The X-Files famously just crashed and burned and kept going. Mm-hmm. I feel like out of all of those, Breaking Bad completely wrapped it up. It felt like I read this massive novel, which I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I think it wrapped it up quite nicely. I think you had all these hopes and ideas of what the finale would be, and even if yours was picked, you would be happy. But the way that they wrapped it up, all the loose ends were tied up. You still had empathy for a lot of the characters, and their stories were continued. And I think it was an ending where you couldn't argue with your friends or be angry at the creators for not finishing it the right way. Like, I know The Sopranos is hard to compare it to because
it's
different.
Sopranos is another big one.
But I know Vince Gilligan was saying in the post-show from the finale, he was saying that while he loved The Sopranos finale, this show deserved an ending that wrapped up, which I'm glad that they did, because if they ended it where you had to create your own ending, I think it wouldn't have been as special. And I think with a show like this that was so strong and powerful that you needed that ending.
Yeah, I saw this with some groups of people, and then I ended up talking about it, and it's just even as well as it wrapped things up, people were like, well, what happens to this guy? Spoilers, here they go. What happened to Jesse? Is he gonna cook meth? He needs money. Doesn't even need money. I'm like, there's other forms of money making money than cooking meth. And then it got so
this
bad.
This is not a universe where you can only cook meth or right. starve to death.
Yeah, and I was like, I got so mad at them because they kept on talking for 30 minutes. I'm trying to watch the post show talking bad or whatever, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't shut up about what Jesse should do. They're like, maybe he goes hang out with Badger and Skinny Pete and they lend him some money, and I'm like, and the whole entire time, he could sell his house and make money and just take off and do whatever he wants. And they're like, no, that can't happen. So then I put in the trailer for Need for Speed right after, and it's like, this is what happens. Jesse takes off in his car. He realizes how great he is at driving cars really fast, and he gets involved in this Need for Speed. And the Need for Speed movie is like the epilogue of what happens to Jesse.
Like Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. The underground racing circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, I was surprised that it, I mean, you know, we're going to say spoilers all over the place. I was surprised it ends with Walt's death, because I was like, going into it, I was like, I thought we would have a little more fallout with the aftermath. I thought we would see Jesse a little bit, and I thought we would see more with Skyler and Walt Jr. and Holly. And I was surprised not to see much with Marie, really, after Hank dies, like,
yeah,
where their lives are going. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, this is really Walt's story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and you don't, if it's not an ensemble piece, which Breaking Bad has an amazing cast and fantastic characters, but it's not an ensemble show.
Right.
You don't have to follow every one of those. When you do that, you run the danger of Lord of the Rings, where you're just running around tying up loose ends for 15 minutes.
That ending, yeah, man, that was crazy.
Lord of the Rings.
It was so many times. It's like, I'm gonna go pee. What? They're still doing this? I don't care about this. But you sit down and you're watching it. And you're like, oh man, this just doesn't end.
The way you felt about the way Lord of the Rings end is the way I felt about the way The Hobbit began. I was like, when is he gonna leave the house? Because I have the animated version, and it took 2.5 minutes. They sang the song about the plates, and then he left.
Well, like, even in the book, it's just like Gandalf, like, pushes him out of the house. So I'm like, I was just like, ugh.
Well, that must have just been Tolkien's extended notes that Peter Jackson went into. As he's in the house, he's doing laundry, he's doing the dishes, he's, you know,
smoking his pipe. I didn't know The Hobbit was going to be told in real time. That's all I'm saying.
It is. It actually is, because we went on a long car ride, and we brought the audiobook of The Hobbit with us. And at the point it got to the end of the movie, it had been 2 hours and 45 minutes. It takes as long to watch the movie as it does for somebody to sit in front of you and read every word of the book.
So it's like Bilbo Bauer.
Yeah.
Hobbit, 24 Hobbit, yeah.
They just put out the trailer this week, and I was like, oh, the trailer looks good. But how much other stuff is there?
Two more movies.
Yeah, but there's a trailer for just a second movie.
I know, yeah.
And it goes up to Smaug, and I'm like, everything they showed was awesome. It was like in the first Hobbit, the stuff they did well was amazing. I thought the scene with Gollum was better than anything done with Gollum in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But that's 15 minutes of a 3-hour movie.
Right. Yeah.
And then my favorite meme is in the Lord of the Rings, I think it was the Two Towers or whatever, when Gimli meets that elf in the woods, that female elf, and it's like, what gift did you get, Gimli? It's like, I asked for a hair. And then it goes like, one hair from her head. It's like, what did you get? It's like, she gave me 3. And then there's that meme where it goes like, I asked Steven Jackson. Oh, is this Steven Jackson? What's his name?
Peter Jackson.
Stephen Brown.
Yeah. So you have Steven in your head because you're in his chair.
He's in your head.
But I'm like, the meme is like Gimli going, I asked Peter Jackson for one Hobbit movie. He gave me 3.
All right, well,
back to
Breaking Bad. So, okay, well, that's how we felt about the finale, but how do you feel about the show in all? Because it gives you a different view. As we said with other finales, some of the ones which weren't so serialized but mm-hmm. were polarizing, things like the last Seinfeld, a lot of people didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, you're a huge Seinfeld guy.
Yeah, I'm a huge
Explain
Seinfeld
fan. Explain the finale of Seinfeld. Because you keep saying it's like a reminiscence of like what the show first started as.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I think what Larry David was trying to do was, show the characters in their element, which is they're together and they're talking about mundane things. Even if they're in jail, they're not talking about jail. And I think, I think it was more of a Larry David finale. I think it was him and Jerry probably thought it would be very funny to do a finale that no one would expect and that probably people would be angry with, which they were. And they probably just did it because they could. I think that's probably why. I don't know. I can't really know because I don't know them. But I know a lot of people hate it, but it's still... I think leading up to the last scene is pretty funny, but maybe they could have gone a different way.
I agree that it's very Larry David. I feel like it's very Curb.
Yeah, it's very, it is I very feel Curb.
Because it's... Curb is always about I think everything Larry David is about, because Sour Grapes is even about this, mm-hmm. is that his philosophy is there are all these social rules, and the minimum infraction will be met with the maximum penalty.
Right.
So they're because these four people have been self-centered and they've been rude to people for 8 years, they have to go to prison. And that's what I like about
it. Yeah, that's why I enjoyed it.
That's the thing of, like, I always, like, when I'm watching Seinfeld, I'm like, in reality, they're a bunch of assholes. Like, I would not want to hang out with them. Kramer, maybe, because he would be the one that would be causing the most, like, I could easily see myself just interested in what he has to say. But, like, even
I wouldn't want to get too involved with him.
Yeah,
it's like, why does he have Asian men in his dresser in his room? I mean, there are little questions like that. Yeah,
but then
little questions.
But what's his name? Who does Jason Alexander
George.
Play?
George.
He's an asshole. Yeah. Like, the whole entire time, like, why do I hang out with you?
Yeah.
Well, he's Larry David.
It's
Larry David right there. And I think the funny thing too is, you know, everyone throughout the show's history was like, oh, this is just like real life. We talk about the same things. It's all in our culture now, the language. But then to end the show with something that is completely not realistic, and it's a TV show, guys. I think that was maybe something else they were trying to do too.
Yeah,
I think, Neil, you hit on something too, is that because it was so mundane and small, it felt really relatable, and you're like, oh, they're just like me, they're just like me. And then that last episode, it's like, hey, the people that are just like you, they're assholes.
They're assholes.
So I think a lot of America went, I'm not an asshole.
I'm sponge-worthy.
Don't you call me an asshole and then leave.
Drop the mic. I still say, as much as, and I'll explain why, but I got into Breaking Bad recently and I just been watched. I remember the first time someone brought it up to me, I was working at Starbucks and this woman I was working with goes, you ever see this show called Breaking Bad? And I'm like, what is it? And she explains, she's like, it's the dad from Malcolm in the Middle. He has cancer and he's a chem teacher and he makes meth to, like, pay for cancer treatments and stuff. And she's like, it's really good, you should watch it. And I'm like, okay, maybe not. And then, like after that, I did it, and people would talk about it. And it honestly was like, those people are probably gonna hate me, but I think I want to say maybe like 2 months ago, I was just like, I watched Orange Is the New Black on Netflix, and I'm like,
that was great.
Yeah, and I was like, I might as well just watch Breaking Bad, and that's when it started. I just been watched that whole entire week, and then I got the rest on Comcast. But I mean, my favorite TV show, with the exception of the final season, because the final season was just so horrible, I think, and it just, like, betrayed the show, I feel like. But The Wire, and
I haven't watched The Wire, but I hear people talk about it in these, like, revered tones. I never heard anybody point out any flaws of it. Final season's really...
Oh, final season's horrible. But you watch, like, I watched the first episode of The Wire, and I think I just wanted to... I got really hooked on HBO shows, and I had Netflix with the disc at the time. And I was like, oh, give me the first disc of The Wire. And I watched it. And I got, like, the first disc of The Wire and then another movie I just wanted to see for the heck of it. And as soon as I watched the movie, I'm like, I'll send this. Let's check this Wire thing. As soon as I finished the first episode, I'm like, this is amazing. Let me watch the rest. And I started watching the rest. That disc ended. I went on Netflix and, like, canceled whatever I was going to get next and just picked all The Wire. And every time I got in it, I would clearly take the whole entire day off to watch that disc for that season or whatever, and it was great. Like, the first season was solid all the way through. You got exactly what you wanted to see. Then the next season, they're like, I could tell that they wanted to expand the universe, so you're watching the second season and you're like, oh, this isn't tied up with what happened in the first season. And you get about halfway into the second season, and then you just, when it finally clicks in, it's like a roller coaster ride, because, like I said, they expand the rest of the city. And you get to see how this is tied into crime and what this means for that part of the city, this part of the city, how politics is involved. And it's amazing. They tackle how the drug trade, how that works in the projects. And then they tackle how those drug dealers get the drugs and how they get the drugs, because, you know, people are taking away jobs from hardworking Americans. So they have to, you know, do other things to make ends meet. Then the third season, it's about the school system, and they teach you how, like, the school system just puts the kids down. So it's like, there is no other option for them. They don't get the college option. They're like, you get this, you get the diploma, and then you're on your own. And the diploma doesn't help you out that much. So that's why so many kids are turning into crime. And then, like, and it escalates and escalates. And then the last season, David Simon,
I think, Simon's the creator.
And, like, I still think he's awesome. But the last season, they talk about like newspapers, and then it shows you the world of newspapers because that's when newspapers started dying. But the side story, the B story for it, about like what they wanted to do with your main character, I was just like, oh, this stinks. Why is he doing this? This goes against everything he's about. And they try to explain it, why he would do it, but you just couldn't buy it. You have like three seasons telling you why Mac works the way he is, and you're like, okay. And then they throw this like left hook at you, and you're just like, no, that's not Mac's character. So because of that, and like the way that show ended, like it did have a good finale because you got to see how they tied up all the loose ends, and they show you how, you know, no matter what you do, the world's going to keep going on and on and on. But and like I said, that final episode was great, but that season was so weak when you compare it to Breaking Bad, where it's just like, it's so strong. And I could easily see people making comparisons between The Wire and Breaking Bad and saying Breaking Bad was a stronger show than The Wire. But to be honest with you, when I saw the first season of The Wire, it had a great intro. Every intro of the first season was like a gimmick. It basically was like, something crazy is happening, blah, 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 blah. And then it goes 16 hours earlier and then explains how we got to that point. But to tell the truth,
Breaking Bad opens kind of the same way with the underpants in the air and the RV.
And like, you know, he has like underwear and like he has mask on. Jesse has a mask on. I'm like, what happened? What's going on? And then it goes back to how it started. And I'm like, oh, talking. Okay.
Well, let's do talking. I think to your point, too, to answer John's question as well, is that the thing with Breaking Bad, I think, that made the whole series so strong was sort of what you were saying with The Wire. The Wire, you know, didn't end great. It didn't end strong, and maybe it went on a little too long. I mean, shows like, you know, 24, I'm a diehard fan for, but, you know, the last few seasons weren't as strong, and, you know, Supernatural should have ended season five.
Yeah.
Had the perfect ending, and I think the thing that Breaking Bad did, which some shows do, some don't, is that it knew when to end. It ended on a high note.
And he walked away from it.
And he walked away.
Right.
And he's not going to, you know, they're not going to taint it anymore. So.
Yeah, and at the time, I mean, that's when AMC was really strong-arming everybody for money. That's when they fired Frank Darabont of Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. That's when Matthew Weiner announced that Mad Men was going to end. So it was part of that whole negotiation that Vince Gilligan was like 16 more. And it gave him the focus that that was the same thing for Lost, because Lost did a negotiation halfway through for three seasons of 13. And then when you know how many you have, then it's like, okay, this is a story we need to tell. Now we can break it into chapters and make sure that there's something every single episode that they
strive for.
Yeah, you don't get lost in this subplot because you're killing time for a while.
I thought from watching the first season, I thought we were going to get more serious about the gray matter. Like, it started so strong with saying like how he started that company and everything. And I was like, I feel like as much as like people tell me this is a show about him cooking meth, I'm like, this gray matter stuff, I feel like that's a really strong way to go too. You know, like, is he going to try and get into the company? Are we going to explain what he did with the company? Is there something that he did was so huge? Like how did he get to a position so big? And it kind of like, apparently the meth cooking stuff got more important and we followed that route. And that's why we dropped the gray matter stuff. And it was kind of nice to see them come back. And actually, I was told that, and this is a sad story, but we're talking about Breaking Bad, so it's all about sad stories. a kid from the Wish Foundation contacted Gillian and was like, and he went to go visit him. And they were talking about the show, and Vince Gillian goes like, do you want to know how the show ends? I'll tell you. He's like, no, I'll wait and watch it. But can you do me a favor? And he's like, what's that? It's like, I really would like the couple from Grey Matter to show up. And he's like, is there a way you could put him in like somehow? And he goes, yeah, I could do that. And that's where that scene in the second to last episode where he's watching TV and that bit comes up. And that's where that came from. And
but then they're a big chunk of the final episode.
Yeah, they're a big chunk of the final episode. And I'm kind of curious to see if that added on, if they were like, oh, we got these. Like, I know that he wanted to close up all his loose ends, but I'm curious to see, like, was that scene going to be a little bit smaller or bigger? Because you always hear how, like, he comes out with an idea and then he goes into his writing room and, like, those guys just pull out all these things out of nowhere. And next thing you know, it just gets better and better.
Right. So. Yeah, the gray matter, I was spending the whole season going, I want to know what happened with gray matter, because we only see one flashback, which is Walt with Gretchen, and he has like the full beard and
like a rock star.
Yeah. He's like a rock star, and he's just like, he's like throwing the chemicals at the board, and he's blowing her mind. And then...
And I have to say this, but I feel like they had better chemistry than him and Skylar.
Yeah, well, then again, him and Skylar, their relationship is all about tension.
Yeah.
But, and the whole time, right up till the final episode, I was like, we need a flashback that shows what happened with Grey Matter. And then I realized it was so subtle the way he put it together was the one thing that really told it for me. I watched the whole series again as these last episodes were ending. Mm-hmm. And there's one of the reasons that it elevated my opinion, because everything fit. You know, there weren't any loose ends that just got thrown out there and then, or forgotten. Everything fit. Like, a guy I thought was a random character in one episode had been set up 3 years ago. And I was like, oh, it was so tight. So a lot of the guys that worked for Mike, most of those guys had been set up earlier in the series. And I had totally forgotten, because I started with, I think, season three. I was renting seasons one and two on disc. And it was one of those shows, I guess to answer your question, how you got into it. I heard about it when it came out, and I was interested right away, and for some reason, I didn't watch it, because it was like, oh, it's a drama about cooking meth. It's got Bryan Cranston, who I liked, and it was Vince Gilligan, who I knew as my favorite writer on The X-Files, and I was like, ooh, in fact, I had liked him so much that I rented Home Fries when X-Files was on, because I knew he wrote it, and I was like, oh, I want to see that, and it just went right past, and then the next season, everybody said it was great, and then finally, I don't think anybody even was watching it that I knew. I rented the first disc, and I went through it really quickly, and I had to go out that night. And Renee came home. I said, oh, I started Breaking Bad. The disc's in the Blu-ray player. If you want to watch it, I think it's pretty good. And I came back, and she had finished all three. And then we had to watch it together, and we went through the whole thing. And I think it was right after – you know what it was? I think it was right after we started Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
I started watching Mad Men – when I went back to advertising, because I took about 2-3 years off from writing and advertising to do stand-up and try to get a comedy career going. And then when my kids were older, I was like, all right, I'm not making any money. I'll go back to advertising. So I didn't have a chip on my shoulder about advertising anymore. And I was like, all right, now I'll watch Mad Men. And Mad Men was great. So I was like, well, Breaking Bad's the other show. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead hadn't started yet. So I started watching that and just flew through it, and then started watching it from season three. But I was amazed that it really held together. But the thing about Grey Matter, which was the original point I was making, and I almost forgot, was that I kept saying, we need to see this, we need to see this, we need to see this. And finally, what I saw was a very minor detail that made all the difference, was the flashback when they're Skylar and Walt are going to buy the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's just one line where the realtor says, oh, well, what do you do for a living? And he's not a teacher. He's like, I work for something labs, and it's not Grey Matter. And I was like, oh, he doesn't quit Grey Matter and go to teaching. This is part of a pattern for him. That he gets a huge opportunity because he's brilliant. He has tension with the people in charge. He doesn't want to share power, and he gets kicked out. And then I realized, oh, if you want to see what happened with Grey Matter, you look at what happened with him and Gus Fring. Because Gus was good to him and put him in a position where he was like, you just cook for me, I'll give you $1 million a month.
Yeah, it's like, here's this awesome lab.
And Walt completely screwed that up. Out of fear, because he was like, oh, well, he might kill me, so I have to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's basically what happened with Grey Matter, was that, you know, it's not explicitly stated, but it looked like Gretchen and Walt were together.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think Gretchen broke up with him, got with Elliot, and his ego couldn't take it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he walked out, and something happened at that other lab, something happened again, to the point where now he's teaching high school.
Yeah, because there was that episode where they went somewhere skiing or something like that, and it's like they just talked about how they were in a hotel room together, and you know, Walt's like packing up his things because something, and Gretchen didn't, like, they had an argument, and it's like Like, I think it was the part when it's like, why are you doing this? Why won't you accept our money?
Right.
And then it's like, is this about this trip? And then like that, all that's exploded.
But yeah. And it comes to the point where I think, if you want to get the big question, maybe I'll ask you guys. I mean, we know the show is about good to evil, and we know the show is about meth, but I think what's making this show fascinating is as I'm reading articles and talking to people about it, it seems like everybody has a different theme that is the center of it. And I think it's open enough to interpretation. And let's go around the room.
Well, when was the first time you started watching the show?
Oh, yeah, right, Neil.
Well, I forget what show I was watching. I love watching TV, so I was probably binge-watching. Maybe it was 24. I remember a friend of mine said, oh, you know, like kind of like everyone else, you know, there's a show called Breaking Bad. It's about a teacher who cooks meth. You should watch it. And, you know, at first I wasn't sure. And he said it was on AMC. And I said, AMC, I can't believe they would make a TV show, because all I remember them for is showing like 30 Days of Horror, and they re-show these movies. And I was like, American Movie Classics, they're doing a TV show? And then I heard about Mad Men, and I was like, okay, well, they're doing some good things. And then at one point I happened to catch, I think, maybe a few minutes of one episode, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, but I believe it was when Walter walked into Tuco's place with the mercury he threw it down and it blew up, and it was just like, whoa, what is this show? Like, he looks nothing like the poster. And then I went back and I started, and I've rewatched it a few times, but that's kind of how I got started.
Is that the second season?
No, that's first season.
That's first season.
That was when when that scene happened, I'm like, finally, he's a bad guy. Because the whole entire time, I'm like, come on, start doing something cool. And it's just like, he's just like, well, I'm cooking meth. I'm trying to, you know, make an ends meet. $1,776. That's all I need to do. And the kids would be okay. I'm like, ah, okay, whatever. When are you going to start, when are you going to start killing people or doing something cool? And then when I saw that,
it happens intro, pretty quick. He kills Crazy 8 in his basement in like the third episode.
But that was like, that was so much talking. But like at that time, it's just when he, like, I remember that episode, the intro was he was bald already. So it's like, sweet, he's bald. And that's what you always get told. It's like Bryan Cranston's bald with the beard, and he had the hat on, and he's walking out with like a bag and has blood on it. And I'm like, oh, he did something badass. What did he do? And then the episode starts. So,
yeah, I love that's one of the things I love about the teasers would always just be this purely visual moment, then you wouldn't know how it connected at all. And even when it was a cliffhanger, like they would leave you right on a cliffhanger, but it would open just somewhere else for 2 minutes, and it would drive you so crazy. You'd be like, but what happened to Jesse? Why am I looking at a turtle? And I think that comes from his X-Files training, because the X-Files always had that cold open where something weird is happening somewhere in the country. Mulder and Scully are almost never in the cold open. It's usually the monster attacks somebody, but you don't know where you are, you don't know who it is, you don't know what it is. And I feel like that you can kind of see the X-Files mostly in those cold opens.
Hey, let me ask a question. Does anybody know, someone mentioned to me a rumor that pink bear with the eyeball, he's actually in a lot more scenes than you think.
Yeah, I read an article about that it's like in the background of a lot of stuff, and people have a lot of different theories about as to what it means. It seems to be like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, and it's just like,
it has its own wiki too.
Doesn't it? What's the deal with the pink bear?
It, let's see. When you guys talk, I'll look it up here and see what they say, but I enjoy the bear. I think it's great.
Yeah, and you always see like...
When I like the bear's eye.
Yeah. And when they do a spoof...
The all-seeing eye.
That's what I think...
Yeah,
when he
lived in the condo and it rolled under the bed and was just staring.
I felt like it was like the eyes... Remember in The Great Gatsby when they would talk about that billboard? About that like optometrist or whatever. It was just like the billboard whenever the main character would drive into New York. And it would just be like these huge eyes. And he's like, every time I drove in, there it was staring at me. Like looking at everything that I did, it was like the eyes of all my sins, whatever. Anyway, but I felt like that bear was like the same deal. Like I felt like that bear was always around, and it was always looking at stuff, especially its eye. Like even that scene when the two brothers from Mexico show up, and they're just like, "What is this?" And they look at the eye, and they're like, "That's weird." And they put it down, and Bryan Cranston notices that the eye was moved, and he's like, "Huh, something weird happened."
Yeah, I think it's a symbol of innocence too, because there's always I think one of the things that makes it powerful and keeps it from being a comic book kind of show is there's always innocence about it. I mean, Skylar's pregnant mm-hmm. and then has an infant. Jesse is very protective of children. And, you know, when he finds out a child's being hurt or in danger, he flips out.
Yeah.
And I think that that the bear is a symbol of that, because it's a bear from the plane that obviously some small child who blew up had. Yeah.
And someone told me, like, if you look at the bear, like the way the bear is blown up, like it's missing half its face mm-hmm. and all that. Someone said that's like the exact same that Gus, like when he died, like, you know, how his half his face was burned right. off. And
yeah,
everything?
He looked like Two-Face.
Yeah. But that's someone said, like, oh, if you look at that bear, the bear has like the same marks.
There was a moment where, I love that scene. That's probably the peak of the entire show, is the assassination of Gus. And Gus may be my favorite character in the whole show, because I've never seen a villain like that.
Yeah.
Who's yep. just so controlled, so cool the entire time. It's always like, anytime anyone's always played a villain, like a Bond villain, like, hello, Mr. Bond, please come
stroking
in.
Stroking a cat.
Yeah. Who's like always calm. They always end up blowing up at the end. And Gus never, the one time he yells is when he's being blown up.
Yeah,
but
and to your point too, I mean, his last move is fixing his tie, because yeah. he's yeah. so put together.
Yeah, but there was a brief moment where I saw him as Two-Face. I was like, now he's really gonna be a super villain.
But like that part when like he was blinking and you saw his eye socket closing, yeah. I was like, oh, because I, you know, I was a biology major. I remember like when we would work on cadavers and stuff, I'm like, oh my God, so that's what it looks like when it's like pumped with blood and working properly. I was like, oh, that's gross.
Well, you know, that's the Walking Dead guys did that.
Oh, did they?
That that's was, awesome. Yeah.
Because yeah, it was Naked Terror, yeah.
Through AMC, yeah. Naked mm-hmm. Terror did that one shot. And then as a thank you, there's a scene in Walking Dead season 2 where Daryl is going through this bag of drugs that he had found off people, and there's blue meth in there.
Oh, that's great.
That's awesome.
Well, to answer your friend's question, Dave, I think, and John just hit on it, what is Jesse going to do after he escaped? I think he's going to go right to Brock to save Brock. Yeah. And then try to create a life for them, because what is Brock going to have now? A foster home, probably.
No, he has his grandma.
Did he have a grandma?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, I remember.
She should just steal him anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, because yeah. she brings him home when he's
yeah,
the
that's
right.
Yeah, and so that's
I also think Jesse's gone. Jesse's finally out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And through the series, you see he goes through rehab, he cleans, you know, he cleans himself up, he buys his aunt's house and lives there, and then it's always this backslide because first of all, it's the opportunity keeps presenting itself, and then it's also the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because Walt kills people left and right, and he's just like, well, I have to do it for my family. But every time Jess kills somebody, it just weighs on him. Like,
yeah, and
like he becomes catatonic after
he only
Gale.
Killed two people. He killed Gale and Todd, mm-hmm. and everyone wanted Todd to go.
And it was that whole thing of him.
Todd's the worst human being alive.
Oh, he's the creepy robot Matt Damon. The whole show.
The fact that he had that thing for Lydia.
Oh, yeah. Where he like stroked her lipstick on the mug. Well, his thing was, you know, he always listened to Walt, and Walt told him what to do. It was his mentor, and then that was so beautiful at the end when he's like, "Do it," and Jesse wouldn't kill Walt. He's like, "Do it yourself," and then he left. I mean, that was the one time. Yeah.
Because like before, you said like, "I will never do anything you say."
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, but like, and it stinks because. You could always tell that Jesse was just missing a father figure.
Yeah.
Because even though his dad and his mom were there, they're just like, I don't want to.
They had rejected him.
Yeah, that's like, I don't want to deal with this.
That's why he gravitated toward Mike for a while, because Mike was like his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he turned against Walt, mm-hmm. Mike came in.
And Mike was a more positive.
No
matter
what. Mike had it together.
Yeah, and Mike was like more positive for Jesse than Walt was.
And a little character thing, what was Mike obsessed with as well? His granddaughter.
Granddaughter. Yeah. Again, it's that innocence in the center.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with Jane and her father was Q.
Yeah.
I love that John DeLancey was in it. I was like, look, it's Q. And he was amazing.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. But there's a lot. I think it's to contrast the fact that, you know, Walt's constantly saying, for my family, for my family, for my family. But he's lying to them. He's neglecting them. He misses Holly's birth. You know, all Walt Jr. ever gets to do is eat breakfast.
Right.
And when Walt
Lewis
Jr.
Lewis drives him to school Lewis. And Walt. Yeah. What happened with Lewis? That's what I want to
know.
I was
saying the whole season, I was like, at the end, the last episode, you're going to find out it's all a plot by Lewis.
It would make sense.
Lewis was like, congratulations, Mr. White.
Because he's driving Walt to school, so I bet you that's what they're talking about.
You almost never see him. You saw him once. I was like, at first I was like, he's the Vera of Breaking Bad. You're never going to see him. And then there's one episode where he comes in, he's on the couch, and Scott was like, thanks for driving, Lewis. I was like, Lewis.
He's got his own meth kingdom that he's starting. Well, maybe what happens is he becomes a pizza delivery driver, okay? And just bear with me here. He becomes a pizza delivery driver. He's kind of interested in drugs. He finds a house that there's no furniture in. He opens the door, and who's behind it? Huel, who still's waiting and is getting pizza every week, and now they're going to start a little...
Have you seen the Funny or Die video?
I saw it, yeah. That sitcom,
I just saw it today called Huel's Rules, and it's like, it's a spinoff where it's basically House of Pain, and it's Huel and his family all have to live in the safe house, and they can't leave.
He's like, we only got three channels.
And he's just like, he's chasing his son around the couch.
A little note about the pink bear... it said that it first appeared in the music video called Fallacies by Jesse's band, Twophammer.
Oh, you serious? That's right. I remember that band.
They showed a video? Because I remember him talking about the band, and I remember him singing it.
He sings it a few times.
It
was released as a webisode in February 2009, before the second season. And some people, like we've talked about, debated about what the bear was about, and one television critic said that he thinks it's a symbol for the damage Walter feels responsible for, because it's always there after times when he's done something wrong, like Skyler finds it when Jane died, things like that. So, interesting concept.
Have you seen the only webisodes I've seen are, have you seen the BetterCallSaul.com?
Oh, I've seen the website. I haven't seen the webisodes on it.
There's like six or seven videos on it, and it's like four of them are Saul like doing commercials. He's like, have you been arrested for owning a tiger? It's like, and then there's testimonials, and one of them is Badger.
Okay.
And he's like, the guy said he wasn't a cop, man. He lied to my face.
That's why when I got excited that, I didn't really get excited when they were like, oh, we're going to do a prequel series about... Saul, and I was like, okay, I guess. And I'm hoping it's like Saul's like wants to be a good lawyer and then he goes bad. But the whole entire time, I'm like, Jesse and Badger can show up to this because Jesse knew him before meeting Walt. He's like, Walt's like, why are we going to this lawyer? He's like, because he's like a lawyer, but like a bad lawyer.
He's a lawyer, a criminal lawyer.
You don't need a criminal lawyer. You need a criminal lawyer.
So I could easily see Jesse like, just saying, like, you know, at least be in the background or something like that.
Yeah, I would love it if Huel and Bill Burr are regulars on it.
Oh, that'd be great. I'm just, they really employed a lot of great stand-ups and put them in great roles, I thought.
Yeah, Vince Gilligan said in an interview that, first of all, he loves comedy. He started being a comedy writer. Home Fries is a comedy before he got on X-Files. He wrote a lot of the comedic episodes of X-Files. But he has said that comics always make great dramatic actors, but not. And Bob Odenkirk said, because it's all about commitment.
Yeah.
If you can commit to a crazy idea in a sketch, then you can commit to a character that's more realistic.
Yeah, Josh Whedon said the same thing. If you listen to the commentary on Serenity, he'll talk about like why you got in the first scenes. Like there's a, I forgot, oh man, this is going to kill me. But there's this character, there's this doctor, and he's a comedian.
Oh, it's Michael Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in all the Christopher Guest films.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, like, I love him. And he said, like, comedy is hard. Drama is easy.
Yeah. Nathan Fillion comes from improv.
Yeah, so that's why he just loves working with comedic actors. So,
And it's always good if you can sell a joke, because we've all seen Halle Berry step right on the only Joss Whedon joke in X-Men.
Yeah.
Where audiences around the world for the last 14 years have been going, what a... Toad and Lightning? What? And then when Joss Whedon explained it, I'm like, oh, yeah. If Nathan Fillion had said that, that would have been really funny.
Wait, I never heard. I knew he wrote it, but I never heard the explanation behind it.
It's supposed to be a throwaway line. It's like, supposed to be just said, do you know what happens when a toad is hit by lightning? And then the lightning hits are going, same thing that happens in everything else.
Yeah.
It's like very but Serenity.
She said it was such drama.
Didn't know it was a joke. And it's like the worst line in the whole movie. He also wrote You're a Dick, which Hugh Jackman knew how to land.
Yeah.
But, I'm looking forward to Better Call Saul because I'm a huge Bob Odenkirk fan.
Oh, me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm glad that Peter Gould, who created the character, is going to be the showrunner because at least it'll keep the same tone that Vince had. So that's what I'm excited for.
Yeah. I also think Mike could have a very big role in this because he definitely knew Mike, even though Mike was working for Gus. You don't want to do, this is the problem that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to keep is that you want to focus on the characters that are going to be there every week and not just wait for the next guest star. You know, although we've had two episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we had Maria Hill in the first one, Nick Fury in the second. But
I feel like Nick Fury in the second was like a last minute.
Yeah, but you said Kobe Smulders in the first one was last minute, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was last minute. Because if you go back, I don't even think it was Kobe Smulders. Or I could easily tell she had her hair differently. She didn't have that short haircut.
No, because she's...
For How I Met Your Mother, probably.
Yeah, well, she's growing it back out. They have the wedding, so... Mm-hmm. She cut it for Avengers, and then last year on How I Met Your Mother, it was this weird in-between length mm-hmm. where she was trying to grow it back.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing, too, about Saul is he has that that TV motif, I guess you could say. You know, like Jack Bauer always had that bag, so it was whatever he wanted. It would come out of the bag, or other characters I'm sure you could think of, but...
Like Shaman in Alpha Flight.
Exactly, yeah. And the thing that's cool is Saul always mentioned, I have a number, I have a guy, I have so many different numbers in my Rolodex and my phone, so the show could go anywhere, really. I mean, there's people we probably haven't even met yet that Mike knew or, you know...
And there's tons of questions people ask about Saul, like where did he get that Hello Kitty phone, so they'll all be answered right
yeah the
there.
Burners
yeah
that's your pressing question is where did that Hello Kitty phone where, come
that's
around?
A whole episode.
Did he steal that from a kid? Did he steal it from Brock? He stole it from Brock, didn't he? That's why Brock, did he steal it from like Brock's uncle, that little kid? That's probably why he couldn't call anybody.
He stole it from the kid they shot in the desert.
Oh man,
he's not using it. Not
well
using
some people it. Feel too I kind of feel this way that Saul is the one character in Breaking Bad that is the most true to himself, because he knows he's a crook, all he wants is money. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really change that path throughout the entire series. He doesn't have any wavering thoughts. He just, where's my money? I'll do it for money. I'll call a guy if you pay me.
Yeah, so, even yeah. even when
but he loses everything. I mean, everyone connected to Walt loses everything.
Yep. Yeah.
Is that, you know, he's the guy that seems safe. Mike was the guy who was always protecting himself from Walt, and Walt just shoots him.
Yeah.
You know, everyone who gets involved with Walt, and I've heard this. I think it was in Talking Bad where they said that Walt becomes cancer to everyone else.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
a good.
So
the
yeah,
cancer
good
that's eating him away eats everyone away, and you see that in the like you see the, that terrible house that Skyler's living in now. It's like it looks like the house in Jackie Brown.
Yeah,
like it's this.
She's
like,
frail.
Yeah, she's been destroyed. She's chain smoking, and like smoking was always a symbol of her vulnerability. Like when things got out of control, she would start smoking. She smoked when she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to hear something funny? So she took like what, 3 puffs when she was pregnant, then they break, you know, like break and they're setting up cameras for the next shot. She really does smoke in real life. So she's talking about, she's walking around the block with the belly and she's smoking, like she's on a cigarette break and she's like, and she's smoking with Aaron Paul and people are like just giving them the dirtiest looks ever. And it's like, why are they looking at us? And then it's like, do they think we're a couple? Because I'm pregnant, and you're like, and it's like, do you think it's because you're smoking and you're pregnant? And it's like, then they had to go back on set and like smoke on set because so many people were just giving them so much guff.
That's awesome. So we were starting to discuss a central theme, and I've been reading articles where they're saying that Breaking Bad is everything from an indictment of healthcare in America to the entitlement of white males. To the war on drugs, to deception. What would you guys say the central theme of the entire series is? And what's the moral of it? I mean, is it as simple as crime does not pay? Or is there something more sophisticated? What's kind of the takeaway you get from the entire series?
My thing is that, and I say this a lot to people, but I totally feel it in this Breaking Bad. It's like pride before the fall. Because literally, if Walt just wasn't so full of himself, he could have easily not gone into this world. If he was just like, oh, they're going to give you money. Okay. And then that's it. It's like, he could have easily like been like, I'll
accept.
Oh,
if he would have accepted their money,
yeah. I could have
yeah.
accepted the money from Grey Matter. Right. And but he was so prideful of himself. He was
you
like,
took my
like,
girl. You it didn't work out with us. I yeah. wasn't in charge. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's just like, F your money. And even when he did have enough money,
kept going.
He kept going. And then it got to the point where like you know, like he didn't even know, like when he found out Jesse was making meth,
he was just like so angry.
He was like, F that. And I'm like when was it gonna end? There's so like it took to the moment, like the moment when Skyler was like, here, let me show you, and it's like all this money's like, is this enough? Can you stop now? And it's just
like, what did he have? Upwards of like 90 million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had 80 million at the end, and then Uncle Jack took all but 10.
Yeah, and then what else happened? Then when his cancer was in remission, he could have stopped then.
Right.
And he just kept on
going. There's that great scene where the cancer's in remission, he goes to the bathroom and he punches the napkin dispenser now he has no excuse to keep going.
Yeah.
And then there's a great scene when the cancer comes back. We're never told he comes back. You just see him in treatment, and he goes into the bathroom and he sees the same dispenser with his fist in it.
Yeah.
And there's a great call to that in the last episode when he looks the reflection from the meth bin that he's looking at, the metal bin, but he's looking at his face once more, or the last time, I guess, in a reflection.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it's all about ego.
I was going to say ego as well.
Yeah, because it's you know, first of all, he has so many outs through the series. It's like, okay, you do this, you get out. And each time you can get out with more money. And there's always something manufactured in his mind. He's like, well, I can't because of this, or I can't, you know, oh, I have to bring Jesse in because, you know, when Jesse's out of control, he might turn on me. Or, and I think it's also very telling, if you look at that first episode, is that his ego has been beaten into the ground.
Yeah.
Because we're at a point, he's probably at his lowest point, mm-hmm. where we don't know how many jobs he has fallen out of, but he's obviously falling lower and lower down the ladder. You know, he goes from gray matter to this little lab. When they buy the house, he thinks he's too good for.
Right. It's a little too small, or whatever he says.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know.
Let me ask you something about that house. There's only one bathroom in that house.
Yes.
Is that clear?
Yes.
And the one bathroom is inside that master bedroom?
I think it has two doors into it, but there's the one bathroom. That's why Leaves of Grass is on the toilet.
I feel that when they bought that house, that was the dumbest decision they ever made.
That's the worst decision Walter White has ever made?
Ever made was buying that house.
Really?
Why do you not get a house with two bathrooms in it if you have two bedrooms? Then maybe you wouldn't have been pissing in the sink.
So it wasn't
like 2 a.m.
It wasn't making meth. It wasn't killing Gus. It was buying a house with one bathroom.
Because those all had excuses and reasons for. But there's no reason someone should buy a house.
Are you starting a realty business? Because that's a good pitch.
I'm just saying. There's no reason you should buy a house where the only bathroom is inside a master bedroom. Because when your kid wants to take a dump, they have to wake you up. And you can.
And then you got Walt Jr. with his...
You know, and I bet you Walt's like, can you imagine? It's like Mom, Dad, I got to go to the bathroom. And it's like, all right, Walt Jr., all right, here we go. There you go,
you hear son. The crutches when they're trying to sleep, the click, click, click. It's like, then, Walt Jr. again.
And then it's just like, can you imagine when it's like Walt Jr.'s just like, oh, I'm going to do... when he going to use the bathroom for a different reason. And he gets in there, and it's just like his mom's like, gets home, and it's like, I'm going to take a shower.
So
and
get out! Get out, he can't walk it.
It's like, how's he going
to Lewis is coming over.
Make like, some bacon.
Yeah, it's like,
Walt, buy me a car.
What's happening, Walt? It's like, oh, the crutches are too far. Let me get a... Walt, what are you doing? It's just like, I'm just saying, like, why would you buy a house with one bathroom?
And Skylar says it's all they can afford.
Skylar's full of shit.
But if you look at that, I also think it's fascinating because Walt has three birthdays in this. 50, 51, and 52. And his 50th birthday, he is demolished. Like, he looks like just this meek little guy, but once you know the backstories, we see he's been beaten down to the point where he has the most impotent mustache.
Yep.
He basically is impotent because it ends with him having sex with Skylar, and she is very surprised.
Yeah.
That he's able to. Hank is kind of like rubbing his nose and everything and kind of being the alpha male in his house.
Yeah.
And
raising his children, basically.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything about it.
That school kid makes fun of him when he's like polishing like the tires. And then that other guy, that Greek guy's going like Walt.
Oh, his boss.
Go watch because.
Yeah.
Oh, they get revenge on him though.
I think that's I love
but
that.
But then revenge. his 51st birthday is like he's got all these secrets and there's this tension in the air because it's happening. And
isn't it Walt Jr. who says, Mom, you didn't put the number on his plate?
That, yeah.
Wasn't it? Because she didn't want to do it for Walt.
And I didn't get that. I completely forgot that was put in the 50th birthday, but it's a tradition.
Yeah.
That like she writes the number.
Yeah, and bacon. I missed that too, because then when we see his 52nd when he comes back
and
from
he's
New
doing
Hampshire,
it.
He does it. I didn't recognize that it was a 52. It looked like he was like, it looked like he made, was making like it. It looked like a mathematical equation because it was two shapes that were symmetrical. So yeah. I didn't realize that it was a 52 until I watched it again.
They also didn't give him enough bacon.
No, he could barely make that 52.
Yeah.
Well, that's Denny's for
that's
you.
Denny's,
that's Denny's. That's
Denny's. Yeah. Grand slam my ass. Yeah. It's more like a double.
Well, speaking about what John said about so many times he had an out, one that really sticks in my head, which I remember watching, and I'm like, Walt, what are you doing? Like, you're an idiot. Because he's a genius, but he's being an idiot, was when he was talking to Hank, and Hank was showing him the files, and he was saying, you know, I think we got him with this...
At the barbecue scene.
No, he's like, I think we got him. And then Walt looks over and he's like, nah, I think that there's someone else out there. Because he was so proud of himself.
Hank thinks Gail is Heisenberg.
Yeah.
And Walt cannot stand that. So he keeps Hank on the path.
Yep. Because they could have ended right there. He could have said, yeah, that was him. Those were his equations. But he had to keep Hank churching.
He had to take credit for it. For that blue.
He didn't want Gail to go down with all of his masterpiece. So,
yeah. And at the end, when Jesse's, when Jesse's a slave, Jesse gets beaten up worse than anyone I've ever seen. He gets it up to 92.
Yeah.
And that's when, it's, better than Walt's, probably.
No, Walt was, 99?
Oh, no, I think Walt's was 96. I think Jesse's might have been 97.
No, I remember.
No, 92 was, the last number. I thought he beat him. I thought Walt was in, high 80s. But
No. Walt was always, in the 90s. But I know that when he went down to Mexico and they tested it, it was at 91.6. Maybe that's because in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles rap, that was the temperature that they were rapping about. But anyway.
They rap about a temperature?
Well, they're like, oh, the street's hot in the city. And it's like, it's 91.6. And it's like, it's a long story. But anyway.
That sounds like a filler line.
It says that Walter
30% White. 30% degree of humidity.
It said Walter White can cook 99.1% pure meth. Jesse Pinkman can cook 96.2. Gail, 96. And Todd, his first cook, was only 76% pure, but eventually it was 92.
Oh, Todd got up to 92.
But no, I thought Todd got it to 92 with the help of Jesse.
With the help of Jesse, yeah. His first cook by himself was 78.
Chained up.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was rough.
You know what's interesting? This occurred to me just very recently that I'm surprised in the entire series of it, Walt never tries his own meth.
Yeah.
He's so fiercely proud of the product, but he never makes that step. And I think it's partially because they go so far out of their way to show meth addicts as the worst human beings imaginable. You know, when the girl from My Name is Earl smashes the guy's head with an ATM machine. Meth immediately makes you the most hard man.
Talk about the casting on that show. Those meth heads were just scary. And those little houses scratching themselves.
Skinny Pete. Every time I watch Skinny Pete, I'm like, what else are you going to... How are you not a meth head?
Yeah, right.
And then when they show you what he looks like normally, you're just
he's playing classical piano.
He has a lot of hair, but he's still very skinny.
But what was I going to say? Oh, this is... We were talking about something and I lost track. Screw it. I apologize.
Well, you know what? We're at 52%. So our meth
sucks.
Are
you serious?
Yeah. Let's end it with one last question. I think we're not going to do Greatest Thing in the World because I think we all recommend you watch Breaking Bad.
Oh, man. We didn't even get to talk about Gus or...
We talked about Gus a little bit. Gus and Mike.
Go ahead. Can I ask one question real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
What was your favorite part of the finale? The only reason I ask this is I know when a series finale happens, you... I was sort of watching it. It felt weird. It felt like not really a Breaking Bad episode because I was just waiting to see how it was going to end. And did you guys have a favorite part of the finale that you kind of maybe cheered inside or you were just so happy that it happened?
Well, my favorite part of the finale, and this is because you're watching the show and like 10 minutes into it, you're like, oh, I think they're just going towards the finish line here. They're going to do anything cool. And even like this, when you see the Gray Matter guys, a couple, when they walk in the house and Bryan Cranston's in the background. That was cool. But the best part of that whole entire episode has to be when Walt's explained to them what they're going to do with the money and all this. And it's like, do I have your word for it? And he's like, you have my word, Walt. And then he walks up and then he points towards the window and the two red lights show up on the couple. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, this is Walt. Heisenberg has returned. And at that moment, I was like, thank God that he wasn't going to like just wimp out. And then he goes, like, when he talks about, like, I have the two greatest hitmen in east or west of the Mississippi going to be following you. I was like, finally, something great. And what made it even better is when you find out that it was Badger and Skinny Pete.
That was my favorite part. Yeah. I was just like, oh, they came back, and it's hilarious. Yeah.
I love that, but I felt like when he walks in, when he follows them into the porch and he starts looking at their stuff, I'm like, he's pure supervillain.
Yeah.
Oh. He's Gotham City supervillain at this point. This is as low as he can get. But my favorite part is when he finally admits to Skyler that he wasn't doing it for his family because there's, you know, when you have $60 million, there's no reason to get another $20 million for your family that live in a very shitty house. But just that line.
Yeah,
I did it for me. But I liked it. And it's his ego. His ego is so beaten down in that first episode where he's living so below his potential that even though he's doing it with illegal, immoral, evil things, he knows he's important. He knows he has an impact. He knows people talk about the blue meth. There is a band in Mexico that wrote a song about the blue meth.
Well, what was that one scene where he meets up with those other meth dealers or whatever, and he throws the bag of meth, and it's like, you know who I am.
Say my name.
Say my name.
Yeah.
He didn't say it like in a Beyonce sort of way, like Destiny Child's, like, say my name. He was just like, say my name. And the guy's like,
it was more
Heisenberg,
like
a, and he's like, you're damn right.
It was more like, I'm fucking you in the ass, say my name. It's all about ego to the point where, like, there was a reason his ego was beaten down, and maybe his ego needed to stay down.
Yeah, because he's like a supervillain.
That's the perfect line for the show. I mean, we're talking about ego. That's the show, that line.
Yeah,
that
say one my line. Name.
Oh, no, not that line, but I liked it. It was for me. That's the show.
Yeah. Because the only way you knew that Walt was ever telling the truth is when he would lie. That's it. That's the only time. It's like whatever he was lying about, that he was telling the truth in a different way.
Yeah. Because it was always, I found it fascinating, and Skyler picks this up, is when he lies, he shows vulnerability. That's he doesn't lie in a defensive posture where most people lie is like, I didn't do that, you did that, and it's because of you. It's always like, look, I have cancer, I passed out, I blacked out. Skyler uses the pregnancy, like when she's caught with Marie's shoplifted goods, and she's like, oh, I'm going into labor, and even with Hank, like, am I under arrest? Like they lose it in their lies. So people back off rather than assuming a defensive posture.
Yeah, and it's like there's certain times when like Walt was trying to explain things and Skyler's like, you're full of shit, Walt. I'm like, lay off the guy, he has cancer. Well, and it's just like
every time he did, I'm like, but you're full of shit too. Oh,
yeah. Well, Skyler was like the only one he couldn't lie to. He was so good at lying to everyone else, drug dealers, kingpins, but when it came to Skyler, he get all nervous, like, oh, I have to go to the Coke machine, it's broken, and get my gun.
Yeah.
But it's like then you find out who the real Heisenberg was. Yeah. It's like Skyler. But one of my favorite moments in the show, I just want to say this before we forget because you mentioned the Coke machine, is when the owner, his old boss, goes like, look at this. First dollar I ever made.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes, Sergey. He goes like, it's like, as is. And he takes the dollar, he leaves, he breaks it, and he buys a Coke with it. And that must have been the greatest Coke that he's ever had in his life.
Well, my last question to wrap this up is, it built to such an extent. The Sears premiere was less than a million people watched it. As we said, all the three of us did not watch that premiere. Mm-hmm. We caught up later. They said Netflix had a huge impact on the audience because so many people were picking up. The final episode was watched by 10 million people, which is almost network numbers, which beats Walking Dead, which AMC has been all over themselves about ratings. We're seeing action figures. We're seeing Neil's wearing a T-shirt now.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a hot.
You dress up Halloween as Jesse Pinkman.
I was Jesse, and my friend James was Walt. Yeah,
it was great. But like the thing,
no one got it.
I didn't get it. Like because I wasn't watching Breaking Bad. But if you dressed up like them now, people will go crazy.
Like, what are you? Are you like scientist or something?
But like the whole entire time when you mentioned it was Breaking Bad, because I would see like those little like ads or whatever. I got it. But like the fact that like it just shows you how much that show has grown throughout the years, and I really feel like it's all because of Netflix, because people were so able to like catch up with it, and it doesn't help that Comcast was airing all the episodes on demand.
But also, it's at a point that's usually reserved for genre stuff. Like, people love Breaking Bad in a way that they love Batman, that they love Star Wars, you know, and it's the one show I can think of that has this devoted a following with nothing supernatural in it, other than the fact that meth will never be blue no matter what you do to it. It's incredibly realistic. And is it, do you think it's just because of the quality that so many other people are responding to it?
The quality.
I think.
What do you think? What do you think it is that has made people so excited that they want to have a Heisenberg action figure at their desk at work? Or the complete series is going to come in a barrel.
Yeah, I can't wait to get that. Do you want to go first, David? Or
From my opinion, I think the reason why this caught up is I think this is a cult following show. You know, it's a cult that does this. It's like the same thing with like Buffy or like Josh Whedon shows and stuff like that. I feel that if...
Because but it's not a genre show. That's
what I'm
saying.
It's not a genre show.
It's a drama. It's not even an action show. I mean, there's guns and there's violence, but not every episode. And it's more about the suspense of is someone going to shoot than people shooting and running.
Well, I mean, you did want to see like Walt be the bad guy. You wanted to see the bad guy win. Because I think when this show came out, so many people were having a bad time. You know, and people were just like, man, I'm put in this pretty shitty position just like this guy. And to see that guy be like, well, you're put in a shitty position doesn't mean you have to stay there. You could do other things. And he was doing other things and, you know, they weren't legal, but he was making his own. I really do think it's because it got popular. And,
But what made it popular?
I think it's the Netflix. I think the word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, towards the third season, people were talking about it. I think that it was such a solid, smart, well-written show that important people caught on to it. Like, Conan O'Brien was a huge fan from the beginning.
He spent the whole show before the final episode doing all Breaking Bad. He had the entire cast and Vince Gilligan out.
Yeah, and I feel like... And you start seeing like
Colbert had Vince Gilligan the next day.
Yeah, and I feel that I think it's like when you start seeing like when Saturday Night Live does a skit off Breaking Bad, or you see people start spoofing Breaking Bad.
Aaron Paul showed up last week.
And it was great because they were talking about Obamacare, and he goes like, "Well, I have a friend who has cancer, and if Obamacare was in, he wouldn't." He is in big trouble as he is now.
Jimmy Fallon, too, did a parody, yeah?
Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon did a great parody.
That was a really good parody.
And, and I feel like, I honestly feel like so many people were like, look at this. What is this? I keep seeing these guys in these yellow jumpsuits. What is it? And they're like, oh, it's something called Breaking Bad. What is that? It's like, it's a show on AMC, or you can watch it on Netflix. And I think just because it was such a well-written show, not many people paid attention to it because it was on AMC, but the right people did, and they kept doing callbacks to it, that it sparked attention. I don't think the show got really popular because you and I watched it. I think the show got really
popular. Nothing becomes popular because you and I are into it.
But just like the modern guy did not watch the show and make it popular. I hate to say this, but I think like when you have people like Conan O'Brien or Saturday Night Live writers or any like talk show writers, late night guys watching it, and they're making reference to it and it becomes pop culture, people are watching it. And they started noticing how good it was. That's why it's such a pop culture phenomenon. That's why people want toys and statues. And there's that alchemy book coming out. And
yeah,
that's what I think.
I agree with you on that. I think it comes down to five things. I think one, it had brilliant writing, and I think it always starts with the writing, especially with the TV show. Where you have that long format to really develop your characters, you know, better than you can in a movie. The production quality, obviously, they had wonderful. You know, directors and DPs and editors and everything.
Yeah, that the New Mexico desert.
Yeah.
It was, and it was originally supposed to be in California, and they moved it to New Mexico for the tax breaks.
Yeah.
But they were the first ones to shoot down there, so it had a look that nothing else had.
And it was perfect for the story, just that desolate, you know.
Yeah, and it turns out there's a ton of meth coming out of New Mexico, so it was still accurate.
Go ahead.
Well, they were saying, like, also, like, they were using, like, new techniques to, like, film it. Like, that's when...
Yeah, they had some great camera moves. I mean, using GoPros and you know, putting cameras in different places just to change it up. And I think the acting is number three. Just wonderful ensemble. I know it's about Walt, like we were talking about, but the ensemble is just brilliant.
I think the acting and the writing, well, just pure character. There were characters I did not like that by the end I really liked.
Like who?
I didn't like Hank or Marie for seasons.
Yeah, great arcs with them, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, I got to the point where Hank became more serious, and then by the time he found Leaves of Grass, I was like, oh, he's the hero now. Now we switch over. I didn't know what was going to happen to Hank.
Yeah.
But, like, Marie... Actually, I started to like Betsy Brand more because I saw her in interviews, and I caught the Michael J. Fox show, and she's really good in that.
She's very funny.
I haven't seen it. I really want to.
It's interesting. It's... I find it the most interesting just to see how the editing happens, because you know they have have to do so many takes.
Oh yeah.
But she's very good in it, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll give Marie more of a chance. But there, every character is given enough layers. Gus Fring is
amazing.
You get his whole backstory. He becomes like, you side with him instead of Walt. You're like, you're like, come on, Gus is just trying to run a business. He's he's trying to take the cartel down. He's like, he's doing so much.
And he's not responsible for that turtle with the head.
No. If those guys killed Danny Trejo, nothing can kill Danny Trejo.
Only the Grimace can kill Danny
he's
Trejo.
He's machete.
Yeah. I was going to say, and then I guess four and five, but number four is you know, who's ever not wanted to throw a pizza on a roof? And then number five, though, in all reality, I think the biggest reason the show's popular is what if is everyone, you know, is beaten down like Walt. Maybe you're in a job you don't like, you're in a marriage you don't like, you're doing something you don't like. And what if you had the smarts and the wherewithal to do something as crazy as cooking meth to make all that money? And you put yourself in that position, you think, what would I do? What would I do if this drug dealer came up to me? What would I do this? And it's just so fantastical that I think you gravitate toward it because you imagined that maybe you couldn't do it as good as Walt. Maybe you could. And I think that's why people gravitated toward the show, because it's just so crazy of an idea. But I think everyone sort of in one way or another imagines a way that they can make meth, as bad as it sounds, to make all that money. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to quality. I think it's just, this is the greatest example of why you can't cancel a show too early. Mm-hmm. And I think, luckily, we're beyond that phase of, you know, when Fox killed off Futurama and Arrested Development within a couple of seasons, because, as I said, this is a show that started slow and became a phenomenon in its fifth season. Mm-hmm. But the quality was always there, and I think some shows just take a while. But I think it's mostly word of mouth, and Dave, I think you're right. A lot of that word of mouth is heavy influencers, people like Conan and mm-hmm. Colbert and Jimmy Fallon. But I think the greatest lesson is that if you're doing something really good, eventually people will come to it. And the fact that it ended so well means you can recommend this without reservations. Mm-hmm. Because how many times do you get a recommendation that's like, oh, it's great, and you're watching it, you're like, well, now it sucks. They're like, oh, yeah, well, sure, the fourth season sucks.
No, yeah.
But I was like, how good was that second season?
Right. Wait seven episodes. It'll get
better. Someone was telling me, it's like, watch Mad Men. It's like, no. And they're like, well, the first season's horrible, but after that, it gets great. I'm like, what? Then why do I want to watch a horrible season of Mad Men?
I didn't think the first season of Mad Men was horrible. Well, I liked it.
So people were just telling me, it's like, oh, it makes so much sense.
Well, every
like,
show gets better because the production gets better and they know what they're doing. I always think the third season of any show is the best because they have figured out what makes the show work, but they haven't exhausted all the great ideas yet.
They're comfortable, have resources.
Yeah.
That's Simpsons. Yeah. That's how Simpsons work. Yeah. People jumped on Bart and they were just like, there's so much stuff we could do. And then as soon as they started tackling Homer, that show just blew up.
Star Trek The Next Generation, that's season three. That's when they change the uniforms and the writing just goes through the roof.
The Office, when like they finally got Pam and Jim, which I was just going to call them Pim.
And you know, Breaking Bad season three is when they get the lab and they're working with Gus and Mike comes in. And
the most iconic image is those two in those jumpsuits.
Yep. Yeah. And what we can say about the show after it all ends is that it's not 99.1% pure. It's 100%
pure. It's 100%
pure.
That is the best place to end. Magnets, bitches. Draw an audience like a magnet.
Wait, we could build a robot? Yo, Mr. White.
and he built a robot at the end with the gun.
Yeah. He did. He built a robot machine gun.
Yeah.
Oh, this was fantastic. Neil, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
How can people reach you?
If you want, you can follow me on Twitter. My name is @fishface. It's FISCHFACE. Or you can find me on Instagram, which is Rough Cut Neil, NEAL. And please reach out. I'd love to talk to you.
Dave?
On Facebook, I have stuff like that, but I don't know how to access it. Just look me up on Facebook, David Redfield. Try and find me. No, seriously, try, because I have no idea how to find myself.
There's nude pictures on
there. There are nude pictures if you search. But it's like whenever you get a person, they're like, oh, where are you? You're on Facebook. I typed you in. I'm like, let me type myself in. I can't find myself. And I'm like, this is stupid.
You should just save. You should email yourself a link.
Yeah.
So you can send it to him. As always, you can like the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. You can find me at Not My Book. That's really the one place to talk about the show. We don't have a Caffeinated Comics name on Twitter because I only have like 175 followers. I'm not going to split them up. But this was fantastic. Steven is at the shop, which we already mentioned, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We know why he wasn't here. So I really hope you didn't watch this and listen to this unless you saw the final episode. But if you did, hopefully you agree. If you have any, if you want to add to the conversation, leave us a comment on the caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. That's the main page, or on Facebook.
I hope Vince Gillian does like an add-on, and it's like Holly and Mike's little granddaughter team up when they're teenagers.
Oh, and they're secret agents.
Yeah, they start like a crime.
They're taking down meth dealers.
You know how you call it redemption.
Redemption.
And just like, and those two are just cracking heads left and right.
We advise you not to go to the comic book store and jump in and just yell spoilers at Steve.
Don't do that. Gus Fring is dead. Thanks again.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!